Sorry. Okay, so in the final lecture, we are going to look at Markov decision processes. So by the end of this lecture, we will have, after much torture, blood, sweat, and tears, learned how to build an autonomous agent that can act in a completely uncertain world in partially observable dynamic environments and yet still decide how to act in an optimal way, in the sense that they will act so as to maximize expected utility. Okay, so let's crack on. The last time we looked at how you build an agent who makes a one-shot decision, and I sort of presented this idea that a rational agent would maximize expected utility. Choose how to act now on the basis of which action that's possible in the current state is most likely to maximize his preferences. And it involves a combination of both probability theory or probability estimates, because the outcome of an action is uncertain and you have a probability distribution over the states that might result from performing a given action. So it's a combination of that plus utility theory, which is this function from states to numbers, which reflect the degree to which the agent likes that state. The bigger the number, the more he likes it. The smaller the number, the less he likes it. And maximizes expected utility basically says perform the action that maximizes expected utility, where expected utility is a weighted average of the utilities of the possible outcomes of a given action, weighted by the probability that the action will have that outcome. But it was a one-shot decision model that I gave you. What we're going to do now is look at a situation where you're in a current state, you've got lots of different goals, you can't get to any of those goals in just one action. You're going to have to decide which goal to aim for and which sequence of actions will get you there, okay? And we're going to do that with a Markov decision process. So recall it that in planning, when we looked at planning, before I started torturing you with maths and was instead torturing you with logic, we were looking at the idea there was you had a state, you had a state description, which was your goal, and you had to decide on a sequence of actions that gets you from the state you're in now to a state that satisfies that goal. And it was able to handle a certain amount of degree, a certain degree of non-determinism, right? So we had things like disjunctions and when clauses in the effects of actions to handle the fact that the result of an action can be different in different states and accidents can happen. And we had replanning and sensing and monitoring to handle cases where unexpected things happen. Nevertheless, planning was still an example where you knew what goal you were aiming for. And it was also a framework in which you can't quantify risk. Now, what we've done with probability theory is we are now able to quantify risk. And with utility theory, we're able to weigh up of all the different goals we have, some of which are mutually incompatible, right? I mean, we could have several preferences and we can't, you know, and they can be mutually incompatible in that we can't satisfy them all at the same time. We now actually have a way of deciding which goals to go for and which sequence of actions is optimal in the sense of aiming for that goal. And it's called basically a sequential decision problem, okay? So that's what we're going to work on today via this example here, okay? Now here we've got a grid and we've got the robot going round the grid. La-di-da-di-da-di-da, right? He's deciding which direction to move in. This thing in the middle is a pillar, okay? And he's got two exit points, one of which will give him a reward of -1, bad, okay? One of which will give him a reward of +1, much better, okay? Now, when he moves, when he performs an action, the outcome of that action is slightly non-deterministic in the sense that the chances of him heading in the direction he intended is only 80%. There is a 10% chance he will slip sideways to the right, or another 10% chance that he'll slip sideways to the left. Okay. So for example, if he's here, if the robot's in 3-1, and he wants to go this way, then there's an 80% chance he'll end up in this square 2-1. But there's also a 10% chance he'll end up here. And there's a 10% chance he will hit the wall and actually stay where he is, okay? So the left in this case, because the direction intended is this way, goes down that way, okay? Similarly, if the robot was here and he intends to go that way, there's a 10% chance he'll stay where he is, because there's a 10% chance of going to the right, hitting the pillar and basically ending up where he is, okay? So you get the scenario. Do you get the scenario? Yeah. Okay, so if you're here, say, what should you do, right, to maximize your expected utility? That's the question. And we make it a little more interesting by assuming that it costs you something every time you move. And in fact, we really will make it a cost by assigning it a negative number. Every time you move, it costs you negative 0.4, right? So you're getting, you're basically reducing your money, if you like, by 0.4. So by making it a negative number every time you move, you do want to get out eventually, okay? You do want to terminate this process and not go on ad infinitum, because you'll end up bankrupt. All right, so that's the example. Now, so the problem is, if I'm here, which way should I go, right? That's the problem we want to talk about. Or if I'm here, which way should I go? So to describe such worlds, we have two things. And in fact, it makes it a lot like a dynamic Bayesian network. The first is the transition model. That is basically a function that takes a state, an action, and a possible outcome state, and assigns a probability to that triple, that this, and basically it means, it defines the probability that if you're in state S and perform the action A, you'll end up in state S prime. So for example, back here, that transition model, if you're in here and the action is move up, then the transition model will say, if you're in 3-1 and the action is move up and the result state is 3-2, then the transition model says it's 0.8, okay? On that triple, it's 0.8, okay? Now, the model's Markovian in the sense that the probability of reaching S prime given the action and the state depends just on that state and action, not on the prior history of states that you have visited prior to S, okay? So it's a one-order Markov assumption. Okay? Now, we also then have a utility function that is going to depend on the environment history. In other words, the sequence of states I've been in. Every time you hit a state, you receive a reward, which I've said is minus 0.04. So it's going to cost you something, since this number's negative, to visit any given state that's not the terminal guys, either the plus one or minus one. All the others cost you minus 0.4. Okay? For now, let's assume that the utility of an environment history is just the sum of these rewards. Okay? Then what does that correspond to? Anybody? Think about A star, okay? The search algorithm A star. If I'm talking about the utility of the environment history, right, which is the sequence of states I've visited so far, from the initial state right up to the one I'm in now, which bit of A star is that? It's not the heuristic, actually, it's the cost, right? A star is the cost plus whatever admissible heuristic, your estimate for getting from where you are to where you want to be. The utility of the environment history is the cost bit of that, right? Because you're adding a reward for every state you've been in from the beginning up till now, and I really am making it a cost because I've made it negative, okay? So what we haven't looked at yet is your estimate of what you can achieve from the state you're in now to the point where your process ends, to the point where you bottom out and you end up in the terminal state plus one or minus one. What's that, right? If I'm here, what's the maximum, or what's my expected utility, or in fact my maximum expected utility, if I'm here between now and getting to the end? That is the heuristic bit of A star. So if you like, what this is a generalization of search algorithms. It's a stochastic generalization of A star, really. Okay? What we haven't done yet is worked out this second bit, this heuristic, this estimate of what can I get given where I am and getting to a goal. And in fact, it's a generalization in the sense that I may have lots of goals. I've got to decide which goal to go for, right? Okay, so that's what a Markov decision process is going to tell you. So it consists of these three things: the state you're in, the state you start in, this transition model that for every state and action you can perform in that state and possible outcome, it assigns a probability to that thing, so that for all the possible states, outcomes of a given action, it's actually a probability distribution, okay? And this reward for each state. Now, I've called it utility function here, but it's actually not the utility of that state. The utility of that state is, we're going to estimate that, it's complicated. It's a function of the reward, which for us is minus 0.4, or minus 0.04, unless you're in one of the terminal states. But the utility of a given state depends on, for example, how close you are to this guy, this really good guy, right? So you can see intuitively the utility of this thing, in other words, the expected reward I can get given actions I can perform from here, in fact, sequences of actions I can perform from here, is going to be higher than the utility of this guy, right? Because I risk whatever I do here, other than, whatever I do to get out of here, I risk going down the minus one route. So the utility of this thing, you can see, is intuitively less than the utility of that, even though their rewards in both cases are 0.04. But the question is, what are they? How do we quantify those utilities? All right, so that's the question we're going to explore for the rest of this lecture. And once we have a way of calculating that, we have a way of working out what's known as the optimal policy. That's the optimal sequence of actions. Given any state, I can tell you what is the optimal action I should perform in that state. Okay? All right. So that essentially is what a policy is. You write it as pi, and pi is a function which maps you from states to the action you're going to perform in that state. Okay, so for example, pi might tell you, if I'm in 3-1, move up. It might tell me, if I'm in 1-1, move right. You know, I don't know what it's going to say. But anyway, that's what policies do. So wherever you are, the policy gives you, deterministically, a unique action to perform. If the action does something weird, like slip sideways, that's okay, because if you intended, if you perform here a move-up action and you end up in here, the policy will tell you what to do here. So replanning is sort of factored into the policy, right? If things go wrong, the policy itself tells you what to do if something unexpected happens, like you slip sideways, okay? All right, and the optimal policy is the one with the highest expected utility. So when you're given a decision problem like this, a sequential decision problem like this, you want to work out the optimal policy. And to work that out, you've got to compute the utility of each state. And to work out the utility of each state, you have to think about the possible moves, sequence of moves you can perform from the state, and what the rewards would be if you were to, or what the expected utility would be for that sequence of action. So it looks circular. We'll bottom out of that circular thing, right? I'll show how. Now, it turns out when we work through the algorithms I'm going to give for the rest of the lecture, that the optimal policy, if your cost of going from one state to another, if your reward for each of these non-terminal states is minus 0.04, is this. So for example here, you're quite conservative if the reward is 0.04, in the sense that you don't take the shortest route to the terminal case. Why? Because you'd rather avoid going into this square. Why? Because in this square, there's a chance, even if you intend to move up, that you'll slip sideways and bottom out with the minus one, okay? So it goes the long way round the pillar. That's with that cost. Now, if the cost is much less, even if you're here, so if your cost of each state is more than negative one, even if you're here, you just want to get out. Even if it means taking a minus one hit, that's better than staying within the grid. So you just go the shortest route to whatever is the nearest exit. If, on the other hand, your reward for visiting each state is greater than naught, you do everything you can to stay in. So even here, even if you're here, you will just head in the opposite direction to the exit, even if that means that you just keep hitting the pillar and ending up where you are, right? Because if you're here in aiming to go this way, you will stay in forever, right? And that's good, because you'll end up with infinite reward ultimately, unless your battery runs out, okay? You just avoid exits at all costs. So you can see the optimal policy will depend on these stepwise rewards, as you'd expect, okay? But how do I know this is the optimal policy, given the setup we have? So that's what we want to work out now. All right, so before we do that, I just need to say that actually MDPs, Markov decision processes, are stonkingly useful. They are used everywhere. In my own field, natural language processing, it's the favorite way of building stochastic dialogue systems, where the dialogue manager is the component of the system that decides what kind of dialogue move to perform next, given what the user has said to it. And it decides that on the basis of a Markov decision process. Okay, it's all done stochastically. But I mean, they're basically used everywhere. They're used to decide on optimal ways of scheduling, say, adverts in the TV networks like Channel 4, all over the place. Okay. So, but let's look at these utility functions, because finding the optimal policy right? Knowing that this is what we should do in each of these states is dependent on this calculation of the highest expected utility. Well, what is the utility of each state? That's what we need to know now. How do we work that out? Well, you have two choices. You could decide that the utility of a given state is some function of the rewards on some finite horizon of future states you could get to. Or you could decide it's a function of the rewards of, you know, potentially an infinite number of future states, assuming that you never, you know, don't terminate. I mean, here we will eventually, well, here you won't terminate, but, you know, you may eventually terminate in a process like this, okay? But you may not, right? So do we put a bound on this? Well, we are actually not going to put a bound on it for the purposes of this lecture. We're going to assume an infinite horizon. In other words, the utility of a state is some function of the rewards of every possible future state you could visit, given some sequence of actions from that state you're in, going right up into infinity, right up to the foreseeable future. But you won't be surprised to hear that we're not going to simply add the rewards, right, to work out the utility of a state. I'm not going to add them. Basically, we're going to, or you can, but it's a special case of the following, which is that future states you visit, the further away you are from the current state, the more you discount the reward, okay? So, because this discount gamma, you can see it's going gamma, gamma squared, gamma cubed, and so on, as you visit further and further away states. Because it's between 0 and 1, the weighted reward for far away states is much, much less than the weighted reward for the nearer states, the nearer future states. So if gamma is 0, you basically have a toddler, okay? I mean, you know, instant gratification. I don't care how big the reward is for the next state. I want whatever you can give me now, okay? It's toddler behavior. If, on the other hand, gamma is 1, that's a neurotic person who worries about, you know, things in the vast and distant future of their lifetime. And, you know, that's sort of massively going for future reward, possible long-term reward. But, you know, normal human beings are somewhere in the middle of that. Okay, not quite toddlers, not quite neurotic. So, anyway, take your favorite gamma, say 0.4, if you like. Okay? So anyway, the point is that depending on this gamma, the smaller it is, the more you care about instant gratification. The bigger it is, the more you go for long-term reward. All right. So how do we calculate the utility? This is the utility of a sequence of states. How do we calculate the utility of a state? Okay. Now, the important thing about the utility of this sequence of states is it is bounded. Take the maximal reward for any state you can visit. Even if we have an infinite horizon, the sum of this discounted reward can never be more than this guy. So it is bounded. Okay? So we're going to basically use that fact. Okay? In order to compare, we're going to exploit this fact, in order to compare possible state sequences. So here's how you can work it out. You can work out the optimal policy via value iteration, okay? So value iteration is an algorithm where you basically, what you do is you calculate the utility of each state and then you select the optimal action based on those utilities. And since the discounted rewards don't create any problems, we're going to use this as the utility of a given state, okay? So pi star, then your optimal policy will be whatever pi maximizes the utility of the states you will visit, given that you are performing that policy pi. Now, let me explain Let me explain this, because it's just gobbledygook. It looks like a lot of squiggles with no meaning whatsoever. Let's think about pi. What pi is actually doing is creating a kind of tree structure of states. Okay, so you start in your initial state. Suppose you've got two actions. You start at your initial state. The policy pi will tell you which action to perform in that state. Suppose that state has two possible outcomes. Then you're going to have two daughters in your tree. The first outcome of that action you perform in that pi says you've got to perform in this state, and this is the second outcome. And again, there may be the policy will tell you what action to perform in this state, what action to perform in that state. Maybe there are two possible outcomes for each of those. These have the probabilities given by the transition table on them, given by the transition model. Okay. The way you compute E, according to this expected utility, according to this equation, is that you are taking the weighted average utility of all the individual branches and summing them. Okay. So it is a generalization of one shot. Decision, expected utility, okay, of the one-shot action. You're just taking the product of the probability of this times the utility of that, the probability of this times the utility of that, the probability of this times the utility of that, and summing over all these branches, okay? So it's just a generalization of single-shot decision theory. That's what this is doing, okay? So we're aiming for the policy that maximizes this. The question is, how do we compute that? Okay, now, I've already said the utility of a state is not its reward, right? The utility is basically a measure of what you can get in the long term, given the sequence of actions that you can perform from that state, okay? So it reflects what you can do from that state, not what it costs you to get there. Okay? And the reward is basically the most recent cost that it got you to, you know, that it cost you to get there, the one from the prior state to this one. So the states that follow, of course, will depend on your policy. So the utilities of a given state are defined with respect to a particular policy, as given here. It's no accident that this looks very similar to this, right? So the utility of a state, given your policy, is your expectations of the discounted sum of the rewards given your policy, and that you start at this state S with your policy, okay? Now, the true utility, then, is the utility given by the optimal policy. Okay, so that's the maths. How do we calculate it? I'm going to come to that, but the way you calculate it, that I'm about to tell you, basically gives the utilities for the different squares in our sequential decision problem given in this diagram here. Note they are not minus 0.04. Note that as you get toward nearer the plus 1 square, the utilities go up. As you expect. This is matching our intuitions that the utility of this is better than the utility of that. And what's interesting about this, and I should emphasize this, is that suppose you're here. Now, you might think, given that the utility of this square is higher than the utility of this one, that if you're here, the optimal policy should send you this way, should tell you to go up. Yeah? It doesn't. As I said earlier, it actually tells you to go that way. Now, can anyone see why? What's the calculation of the expected utility of going up? Anyone want to hazard a guess? Remember that it's the weighted average. Oh, blast. It's the weighted average, and this works, of the utilities of all the places you could end up, all the outcomes, possible outcomes of going up. Where are the possible outcomes? Is it just up? Is it just 3-2? No, right? I could end up in 4-1, or I could end up in 2-1. I could slip to the left, or I could slip to the right, right? So those utilities are also involved in my calculations. So in fact, the utility, if I'm in 3-1, right, the utility of going up, or the expected utility of going up, being the weighted average, is 0.8 times 0. whatever that is, 660, right? So that is, I succeed with an 80% chance of going up, and I will get that utility of 3-2 with a 0.8 chance, times 0.1, which is the probability of slipping to the left, which is 0.388, times 0.1, that's the probability of slipping to the right. Here's the slipping to the left is 0.655. Now, I worked this out earlier. What is it? It is, let me look at my notes. 6323. Okay? So that's the expected utility of going up if you're in 3-1. The expected utility of going which way? Left? Is 0.8 times 0.655. Plus, oh my God, sorry about this. Typos, right? It's the weighted average. Plus 0.1 times the probability that I slip to the right, that would send me up to 0.660, right? Because I'd be facing left, I'd be facing this way and kind of slipping that way. Plus 0.1 times my chances of slipping to the left, which given the wall would keep me where I am, and I'd get that utility again. And when you calculate that, it is 0.6511, which is bigger. Okay? So that's why in that previous slide, although the utility of the most likely outcome of moving up is higher than the utility of the most likely outcome of moving left, you still move left. Why? Because the utility of ending up in 4-1 is so crap, right? And you just want to avoid ending up there, as it turns out, according to this calculation, okay? So you don't always aim for the state of the square with the highest utility. It all depends on the average of all the possible outcomes, the average, this weighted average, okay? All right, so those are the utilities that we're going to show how you get them, and it's through value iteration. But once you've got these utilities, it's easy to work out the optimal policy, okay? You just do that. Basically, for each square. You work through every possible action, you work out the expected utility. For every state, you pick the highest guy. That's your optimal policy. So once we've got these, we're done, okay? We can very easily compute optimal policy from that, yeah. Sorry?
Your microphone's
fallen off. Has it? Oh shit, it broke earlier. Thank you. It broke earlier. Oh, yeah. It needs gluing. All right. Okay. Thanks for letting me know. All right. So how do we do this then? Well, the utility of a given state is the immediate reward of that state plus this plus the discount of the expected utility of the plus the utility of the current state you're in is the reward for that state, plus a discount of the maximal expected utility of the next state you could get to, given the optimal action you could perform from there. This thing is the expected utility of the best action you can perform, right? And what we're basically saying is that at every stage you assume the next action you perform is optimal, right? That this is another way of writing it. Now, these are known as the Bellman equations. And basically, this is really good news because it means that for every state, what you've got, suppose your thing consists of n distinct states. So for us, how many states do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, right? For each one of these, we'll have 11 equations with 11 unknown variables. It is just simultaneous equations, right? It's like you learnt in standard maths. It's where you were doing binary simultaneous equations, 3x plus 4y equals 16, 5x plus 2y equals 10, right? There are ways of solving, of working out what x and y should be according to these, right? This is an 11 ways simultaneous equation that you would have to solve with this. And the way you solve them is through this value iteration algorithm. So you basically start with arbitrary values for the utility of each state. And you update them as given here, okay? And you keep doing that, and very quickly, your iterations will converge to a unique value for this thing, okay? It will converge to the right and unique solution. So you just start with, arbitrary utility. Make it zero, if you like. And then it would mean that the utility for the next iteration, for the first iteration for state S, say 3-1, would be minus 0.04, right? Because it would be the reward plus this gubbins here. But since all my utilities are initially set to zero, this whole sum would be zero. So I would update the utility for that state 3-1 from zero to minus 0.04. You do that for each of the states. You then iterate again. All the states except for the terminal ones will have this utility minus 0.04. You calculate this thing, what's the maximal guy, you put in your discount factor, you're going to get another little jump, right? In fact, for our problem, the iterations look like this, okay? So you can see it converging. It goes down initially because the reward is a negative number, but gradually it increases, okay? And that's because gradually you get to places where you can come out with a plus one. Okay? And it converges pretty quickly, actually. I mean, you've basically converged at about the 12th iteration for this problem. Okay? So that's where those utilities here came from. And once you've got those, you can work out the optimal policy and you're done. Okay? So that's it. There we have, after much horrible, tedious effort, we have modeled an autonomous agent that can work in an uncertain world where its actions sometimes don't have the effects you'd expect. There are certain, unwanted side effects like slipping sideways. And it may have several goals. It may want to preserve battery while at the same time running fast to score that goal. It can decide which of those goals to service and how best to service them in this kind of, in a one-shot way, in the sense that it is weighing up, it's always trading off the degree to which it wants something and how much it's going to cost the robot to get there. So dynamic decision networks then, ultimately, they look something like this, okay? So when you don't know, here what we've got is you know where you end up, right? A situation where you may not know where you're going to end up when you're just before you perform an action, but once you've performed it, you know where you are, okay? It's fully observable in that respect. If it's partially observable, it looks like this, right? We have hidden states, evidence for where we are, and it's basically a generalization of what we've done. It's the combination of this Markov decision process plus the dynamic Bayesian network stuff we've done. I'm gonna leave it there. I've tortured you enough, okay? So that's it. What have we done in this part of the course? We have described many ways of describing goals, right? As partial descriptions of states on the one hand, that's a logical approach to it, via utility functions on the other, in which you may have several goals, some of which you prefer over others. We have defined symbolic ways of dealing with uncertainty and symbolic ways of dealing with partially observable environments, and also stochastic ways, using probability theory and utility theory. And this has only been a course in which we have dealt with single agents, okay? So this is not the way you would model football teams, where, you know, that really is a game. But if you're interested in this stuff, there's plenty of opportunity in your honors years to explore that further. And it is fascinating. I mean, I think this area, it's not my area, but I do find it fascinating. Are there any questions about any part of the course in the last, like, 5 minutes? Any questions about the exam and the structure of the exam? Of course, I can't tell you the questions, so don't ask.
Is it the same like last year?
Yes. Yes, so you're going to get 20 multiple choice questions, and then you have to answer two questions, one from each part. And part A is basically Jacques' part of the course, and part B is my part of the course. And you have to answer one question from each of those parts. And the division of marks is the same as last year. Okay, well, good luck in the exam. For those of you in my tutorial, it's tomorrow, not on Thursday, because of the strike. Okay, tomorrow at 10 a.m. Okay, see you. Thank you.